morning, 807, 7 minutes after 8 here on AM 760, Progressive Talk. Jay Marvin on your Palace of Public Opinion. Sunny high today, 35. Uh-oh, now we got problems. Well, maybe we don't have problems. We'll discuss this a little bit later on in the morning. But guess who's going to run again? Ralph Nader. All right, right now, though, we're going to talk about small business. We're going to talk about the recession on small business. You know what? There is 26 million small businesses across this country. I've said this before. They're the lifeblood of the community. And if you're a small business person, you want to hear what this guy has to say, because when it comes to small business, Lloyd Chapman knows what he's talking about. He's the president and founder of the American Small Business League. And he says President Bush's final State of the Union address Monday, well, he just wasn't very happy with it. Lloyd, good morning, and welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks, Jay. It's great to be on your show again.
All right. First of all, the recession that we're either in, depending on who you talk to, or we're sliding into one, how is small business faring with this?
Not very well. 56% of all Americans work for small businesses. So when you see, you know, a recession like this, it affects a lot of small businesses. I went to a small business the other day that I've been going to for quite some time, and I pulled up to the door and got out, and there was a big sign on the front door, and it said, closed due to this bad economy. Thanks for the 20 years. And I'm going to take a picture of it and put it on my website, but, you know, thank you, President Bush. Small businesses are going to be the hardest hit, and I, as usual, you know, Bush didn't really mention small businesses as much in his State of the Union address. And when Republicans mention small business, they generally will mention it in the context of the Republican political platform, which is less taxes, less government, and tort reform. And they act like small businesses really have to have tort reform, but it's actually Fortune 500 corporations that need it. But anyway, it's very disappointing, and it's going to be something that a lot of Americans all around the country are going to feel.
What do you say to people, though, who would say to you, and you must run into small business people, because I know I do, who would say to you that, well, the Democrats want to raise taxes, the Democrats want overregulation, I just want to be left alone, blah, 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 on and on and on again. And then you try to make the case to them that, well, wait a minute, though, the administration and that party doesn't really care about you. And what they're doing is they're just basically, you know, like throwing lumps of coal into the fireplace of a steam engine, the firebox of a steam engine. I mean, they're pumping you full of smoke, but they're not really delivering anything. I mean, how do you combat that?
I tell people to look at the facts. Ronald Reagan tried to close the Small Business Administration for 2 years. That's the only federal agency that's there to help small businesses. They give small businesses loans and helps in starting their business. And, of course, the federal law that requires that 23% of all federal contracts go to small businesses are all administered by the Small Business Administration. So I think it makes sense. You can't say you're a pro-small business president when you try to close the Small Business Administration. And that's, you can go online and type in abolish SBA and see those stories. In 96, Republicans proposed legislation to close the SBA again. And then as soon as George Bush was elected president, he began to cut the SBA's budget and staff. Today, the SBA budget and staff is about half what it was during Clinton. In June, the Bush administration adopted a policy that allows Fortune 500 corporations to get small business contracts through the year 2012. And then when Bush passed the legislation limiting bankruptcies, that really affected small businesses primarily. And that was something that was done for the big financial institutions that, you know, how many credit card applications have you gotten in the mail, you know, last month? You just get them, you know, constantly. And so that was something that was done for big companies that hurt small businesses. The average small business, let me think about it real quick. I think something like 90% of small businesses start go out of business within 48 months. And so with the new bankruptcy law, it makes it almost impossible to try again. Where in the past you could try, you know, two or three times and finally get a business at work. But with the new bankruptcy law, that makes it very difficult, if not impossible. And that's something that really hurts small businesses. And that's something that, you know, that the White House did.
11 minutes after 8 here on AM 760 Progressive Talk. We're talking about small business, and we have the head of the American Small Business League, Lloyd Chapman, on the line. And also, last time I had you on the line, you also mentioned the thing that never gets covered by anybody in the media, the fact that the administration basically had taken money that was earmarked for small businesses and diverted it to large Fortune 500 companies, correct?
That's absolutely true.
And so, no one has picked up on this, right?
You know, they haven't much, and I'll tell you something. I was hoping we could talk about this. It looks like it's around $100 billion a year. So it looks like since Bush was elected, around $700, $800 billion in federal contracts that by law is supposed to go to small businesses, you know, the companies where most Americans work, the middle class of America, has been diverted to some of the largest companies in England, France, and America, Fortune 500 corporations, and you can't get that story out to save your life. Just recently, I did my third on-camera interview with the Associated Press, and the story was supposed to come out. I did it around mid-December. The story was supposed to come out before Christmas. Never came out, and that's the third time I've done that. I've done interviews with NBC, CBS, CNN, the LA Times, the New York Times, the Associated Press. The story never ran. I saw a story a couple years ago. The Journal Accounting Office had done an investigation, and it showed the White House had hired two or three of the biggest public relations firms in the world, and they pay about $2 million a day to these PR firms. And you can imagine what you can do in the media when you've got the biggest PR firms in the world working for you, and you're paying them $2 million a day. So this is one of the stories that the White House doesn't want to get out. And it's some things that have happened to me are just really like something out of the X-Files. I had a reporter from the Boston Business Journal interview me for probably 10 hours and wrote this scathing story about the diversion of small business contracts to big companies. And it came out. It was a great story. And two or three days after the story came out, I called him up to talk to him, and he said, "Don't ever call me again. Don't email me. Don't contact me." And I've been through that about maybe 15 times.
But yet, you know,
it's amazing, huh?
You can't, but you just can't get through to some of these folks who really believe that the GOP and that the administration is on their side because they operate a small business.
Well, I'll tell you something. I snuck into a NFIB convention one time in Washington, D.C. that was in the hotel I was in. The NFIB is the National Federation of Independent Business, and yes, it's a conservative Republican group. And I talked to a few of those people, and I just kind of walked in and strolled around and talked to people. And some of them were like they've been brainwashed. And I'll have to say that the Republican Party has done an absolutely fantastic job of just unrelentingly put this message out there, and they've just sort of, you know, convince people. But you have to stop people and say, look, you know, go online and Google abolish the SBA and look at the stories. You know, what is it? Vanderbilt University has the congressional hearings on tape still that you can borrow and see the hearings where David Stockman, Reagan's budget director, was arguing aggressively with Congress about closing the Small Business Administration. And you can go into Google and type in, you know, Bush cuts SBA budget, whatever, and you can see the story. So there's, you know, I have a thing that I tell people, if you want to tell the difference between what somebody says and how they really feel, watch what they do. So if you quit listening what Bush says and look what he does, he's anti-small business. Here's something I think about. I think that in fact, here's an interesting thing. Fortune 500 corporations want this money. So it's about $140 billion a year in federal contracts that's supposed to go to small businesses. If it doesn't go to small businesses, guess who gets it? It's the big Fortune 500 defense contractors. So think about who has more clout in Washington right now. Lockheed and Boeing and Halliburton are America's small businesses. Obviously, it's a big defense contractor. So the big defense contractors are pushing these policies and this legislation because they want that money. And by the way, they're getting it. I'm actually about 4 or 5 days away from suing the SBA for the fifth time, trying to get them to simply release the names of the firms that the Bush administration says are getting small business contracts. And they won't do it because it's Lockheed and Bechtel and Halliburton and Northrop Grumman and the biggest companies in the world. But I'll win that one. That'll be about my sixth lawsuit I've won against the Bush administration. But if anybody doubts this, have them call up the SBA and say, where can I get the list of the firms that got small business contracts in 2006? And I just wish that we could get a big-time investigative journalist to look into this. But like I said, it's been really, really difficult. Maybe somebody in Colorado can take a look at this story and help get it out there.
Yeah, as you were saying that, I'm trying to think about who to go to with it, who would write about this. Maybe one source would be David Sirota. Maybe another one would be John Nichols of The Nation. But yep. You got the phony populist, rah-rah America populist Lou Dobbs. You had your tangle with him in which they wouldn't run anything. And he's supposed to be one of these people that cares about small business, and, you know, he wouldn't touch it. Am I right?
Yeah. To refresh everybody's memory, I spent a month working with the Lou Dobbs Show. They came out to my office and spent a day filming a story about me on Tuesday. It was supposed to run on Thursday, and they didn't run it. And I called them up, and I said, hey, what happened? She said, well, Lou found another story he wanted to run. It'll run next week. And so I called next week to see when it was going to run. They said, quit calling here. And, finally, after about 3 months, I got tired of waiting, and a public relations consultant that I knew told me not to cause any trouble with CNN. But after 3 months, I went on the Ed Schultz Show on a Tuesday, I think it was, and complained about it. And this was like 3 months after it ran. And after talking about it on the Ed Schultz Show for about an hour, it ran about 2 days later, but they cut out any mention of me and my trade group. It just was kind of a wishy-washy version of the story without me.
Well, and most people forget, though, before Lou got on this whole crusade about broken borders and I'm Mr. Populist, he used to have that business hour show on CNN where he would put these corporate executives on and suck up to them.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody conveniently, forgets about that. But the thing that gets me is, I admire small business people. I mean, I just really admire them. Even if their politics are not the same as mine, I don't care. I admire them because they're the lifeblood of the community. They take a risk. They work very, very hard. They're everything that embodies what America should be. And yet, it just pains me that some of them, you just can't get through to them, that their own government and the party that they think is supposed to be helping them is basically turning the screws on them.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's very frustrating, but again, they just get bombarded with this propaganda. And the president just talks over and over about small businesses being, the heart of America's economy and blah, 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 blah. But people don't see what they do. In fact, my website, ASBL.com, if anybody questions, that Bush is anti-small business, just have them go to the website, and there's a section called Media, and read some of the stories. In fact, here's something that you and I can both do next time that happens. Report 515 from the SBA Inspector General. Now, I think people would probably agree that the Inspector General for the SBA is not, biased. In March of 2005, he came out with a report called 515, and he basically said that the diversion of federal small business contracts to big businesses was one of the biggest problems facing the nation today. His name was Harold Damlinson. And about a week later, he came out with a report that said that the SBA was giving small business contracts to a company in Holland. And then about the same time that one came out, report 516 came out and said that it's fraud. So here's a federal official, an inspector general, who came out in March of 2005 with three reports, report 514, 515, 516, that says Fortune 500 companies getting small business contracts is one of the biggest problems facing the nation today. Companies in Holland are getting small business contracts, and there's fraud. Now, if people don't believe that, then I'll just give up on them. But I think so far they've been around 12 federal investigations during the Bush administration that have all found that billions and billions and billions of dollars of federal small business contracts have gone to Fortune 500 companies. And I think that should be pretty conclusive evidence for anyone that thinks that George Bush is pro-small business.
22 minutes after 8 here on AM 760 Progressive Talk. We have Lloyd Chapman with us. He is the founder of American Small Business League. Go to his website at ASBL.com. One last question. The stimulus package they're talking about, will it help, hurt, or do nothing for small business?
It's insignificant. So, you know, again, the business I saw the other day, it's got a sign on his door says, you know, closed after 20 years. So they're going to give them $600 or $1,200, big deal. You know, what difference does that make? So Bush has diverted $100 billion a year from small businesses for 7 years. It'll be 8 years by the time he's gone. And the stimulus package is going to be insignificant. In fact, quite frankly, most people are so far in debt that they should take that money and probably pay off their credit card debt. So it's not going to really have much of an impact. In fact, I think about people's motivations. So if Bush wanted to stimulate the economy, you know, there's a lot of ways to do it other than that. In fact, quite frankly, you know, my issue, if he really sincerely wanted to stimulate the economy, he'd quit giving small business contracts to, you know, Lockheed and Boeing and Halliburton. But so I think when it really gets down to it, you're going to see the stimulus package is probably going to help big companies more. And I think it's going to be insignificant what it does to the public. I think the Bush economic stimulus package is smoke and mirrors.
You ever sit back and ask yourself what motivates these folks?
Oh, I know what motivates them.
I mean, besides money, the obvious. How do they live with themselves by screwing people over on a continuing basis?
You know, I've been around these guys a lot. I have been, you know, right with them. They think that it's good for the country. They've convinced themselves, you know, that Halliburton getting, you know, billions of dollars in no-bid contracts is good for the country. I actually talked to a friend of mine the other day that's a staunch Bush supporter, and it was really fascinating sitting across the table talking to him because he was just delusional. But, you know, they convince themselves that it's patriotic, that it's good for America. And, you know, how does anybody that does something wrong live with it? They convince themselves that it's great, right? If you go talk to a Taliban guy or an Al-Qaeda guy and say, you know, how in the world did you do that? Well, it's, you know, right? They can convince themselves that it's right. But, you know, I guess you might call them political zealots or something. But they've definitely got, you know, some paradigms that are different than yours and mine. But I think, you know, I've met a lot of small businesses that were going bankrupt. And to tell you the truth, when you're sitting there talking to a guy and his wife, they're losing their small business, and the wife is crying, you know, and the husband's consoling her. I've been through that 1,000 times. And I think that every day, in fact, during our conversation here this morning, probably, you know, 1,000 small businesses have gone bankrupt, have finally realized, okay, we just can't make it anymore, right? So every day, hundreds and thousands of small businesses are going down the tube, while the White House is continuing these policies that divert, you know, tax dollars, you know, to big corporations and not to the small businesses. But it's, by the way, they're doing a lot of other things other than that, by the way. You know, when we think about how do you think the increase in gas prices have hurt small businesses?
Yeah, tremendously.
Oh, that's been devastating. If you've got like a bakery and you're delivering donuts and you now have to start paying, you know, during the Bush administration, how much has gas gone up? It's doubled.
Yeah.
So ExxonMobil made $40 billion last year, and I would imagine a significant number of small businesses have been pushed into bankruptcy because they can't afford these, you know, fuel prices. If you have a plumbing company with, you know, six plumbing trucks driving around, it could be that increase in fuel was the straw that broke the camel's back and pushed you over the edge. So, again, while ExxonMobil and the oil industry are making the biggest profits of any corporation has made in the history of mankind, you know, we have a recession. So ExxonMobil, by the way, is an experiencing recession. You know about that, right?
Right.
I saw Jonathan Edwards on TV the other day. He said the president of one of the nation's largest healthcare providers made $200 million last year. You know?
Yeah, they get these whopper salaries while the rest of us sit here in an unstable, insecure economy and job situation while they're doing just fine.
Well, that's the Republican Party. That's their political platform, and that's great for them. So while America slides into a recession and ExxonMobil makes record profits, that's exactly, you know, what they want. Because, by the way, ExxonMobil you know, is one of the biggest contributors, I would imagine, to the Republican Party. So it's really unfortunate that that more people don't understand that. Hopefully this next election cycle, people will wake up and see what's happening and you know, make a change for the better.
I hope so. All right, we urge people to go to ASBL.com. And by the way, keep us informed what happens with this lawsuit.
Sure, it's going to be fun. I always, it's always interesting to see what they do. They'll do anything to get out of this, but we'll find out in the next few weeks.
All right, Lloyd, good to hear your voice again, man, and hang in there.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, there's Lloyd Chapman from the American Small Business League. What a good guy. And if you're in a small business or you know somebody that's in a small business, you just heard what he had to say, let's start getting the word out here that small business people are getting, well, they're just not getting treated fairly by this administration, and this has got to change, and we are going to change it. 8:28, 28 minutes after the hour here, AM 760 Progressive Talk. John jumps on traffic. Minutes after the hour here, AM 760, Progressive Talk. Jay Marvin, as we chug on under the Society of the Spectacle until 10 o'clock this morning. Sunny high today, 35. And once again, thanks to Lloyd Chapman from the American Small Business League. 26 million small businesses across the country. And I just have the utmost respect for small business people. I really do. I like them. I admire them. I wish I had that ability to be able to do something like that. And I just don't. And they deserve all the help that they possibly can get. All right, let me give you a little rumor here that is circulating around. Not sure if this is true, but it is circulating around that Ralph Nader, remember him? That Ralph Nader has put together an exploratory committee and is now thinking about running for the presidency of the United States. I'd love to get your reaction to that. 303-713-7600. What about Ralph Nader? And should Ralph Nader run for the presidency or should Ralph Nader stay out? Considering a lot of people, and I'm one of them, I blame Ralph Nader for 2000. I mean, I think he had an integral part of that. And I have a very, very dim view of third parties because they just don't seem to work, and they rob from one. You know, they rob from Peter to pay Paul. So I'd love to know what you think about that. 303-713-7600, and I got like four open lines. Anybody want to comment about Mr. Nader? And I know that Ralph Nader's got supporters among some of the listeners of this radio station. I'd like to hear why you think it is a good idea for Ralph Nader to run for the presidency of the United States. We'll take your calls coming up. John Turk gives us a quick turnaround on traffic. Minutes after the hour here on AM 760 Progressive Talk. Jay Marvin, transmitting vital information on your wireless. Is that what they used to call that thing? Didn't they used to call radio like the wireless? Back in the days when you used to turn on tubes? Anybody remember that? You have to wait for the radio to warm up? John doesn't even remember that.
I do remember having to go out and, like, when it would snow down at the college community station I worked at in Durango, we used to have to go, take a broom and wipe off the snow from the satellite.
No, but I'm talking about the days when you went to turn the radio on, you'd have to wait for the tubes to warm up and transistors were like, look at this, no wait at all.
Did it take longer on cold days?
No, it didn't make any difference.
It didn't make any difference.
Because it was inside your house. It was your, little tabletop radio was like, see, you know what? We're in a whole different generation here.
You old fuddy-duddy.
Yep, you got it. All right. Let's get on this thing about Nader here. And we'll start with Rick in Boulder. Rick, you're on AM 760. Good morning.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
So, the thing that concerns me is when you have someone like Ron Paul that, yes, he's a Republican, but he's not even being covered by the media when he gets more votes in the caucuses than the than the second place candidate. That seems like a much stronger issue than whether Nader runs or not.
Well, he was in the debates last night. I mean, that's at least better than not being there at all. He was in the Republican debates. Now, tonight is the Democratic debates. And, of course, the only two there are going to be Obama and Hillary Clinton. But at least Ron Paul was in the debates. Ron Paul is alive and well. And as a matter of fact, he will be in the Denver area on Friday.
Yeah.
But Nader is the one... Nader is the one that a lot of people point to, and a lot of people say, okay, if he had stayed out of it, if he hadn't have ran, the 1% or 2% that he attracted, Al Gore would have gotten, and we wouldn't be sitting in the situation we're in now.
Right. The one thing is, if we'd gotten Al Gore in, I mean, I understand what you're saying about the current administration, and I'm completely behind it, but behind what you say, not the administration. How do we know what would happen with a Democratic administration at this point in time? I mean, I think the climate's changed so much, it's hard to say. And things like mental health parity and that kind of thing, it seemed to me like they would do more harm for small business than even what the current administration is doing now.
Well, I don't necessarily buy that. I mean, I think there are a lot of things that would be different if we had a Democratic president. I mean, the idea of, well, they're going to raise taxes, and they're going to do this, and they're going to do that, and everybody ought to be scared. And really, like what Lloyd Chapman was pointing out, you know, that's a smokescreen to protect the top 1% to 5%, and it's a smokescreen to protect the big boys while the rest of us get stepped on. And I think that Lloyd Chapman has numerous examples of that. So that's number one. And then number two, look at every federal agency there is. Most of them have been gutted or hollowed out. And then you also have the idea of judges, including the Supreme Court. Now, do you think under John McCain or Mitt Romney, do you think that a lot of those agencies, a lot of those federal agencies, do you think that they'll be restored to the strength that they should be, including the Small Business Administration, the Federal Communications Commission, the National Labor Relations Board? I mean, all of that. Do you think that we would fare better under a Republican than a Democrat? I know you wouldn't, but I mean, in other words, there would be significant changes that would go on. Now, would they go far enough to make you and I happy? That I don't know.
Right. I certainly don't think they'd be restored to what they could, and I don't have any magic bullet for what would solve small business problems. I don't even know that loans would help. I don't know what the statistics are about the successful small businesses, how many of them got these loans.
Well, what Lloyd Chapman's talking about is not many of them, because the money's being diverted to people who don't deserve it.
Well, granted.
You know, we don't have any.
Alberton didn't need it more than the small business.
Yeah, so we don't have any. You know,
sure.
You're right. So we don't have any way of knowing. Hey, Rick, thank you, man. Appreciate the call.
Okay.
All right, let's go to Don in Denver. Don, you're on AM 760. Good morning.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm doing good.
So yeah, you pretty much, when you were talking about Nader, you had said he was robbing from Peter to pay Paul. He's robbing from Peter to pay nobody. I mean, it's a throwaway vote. I fully agree with you. I think that 2000 would have gone completely differently had Nader not run. And I mean, really, Edwards yesterday, you know, he threw one in for the team. He said, you know what, I don't think I'm electable. I've got 4% of the vote here, and I'm going to give it away to make sure that we get a Democrat in office.
Yeah.
Nader's exploratory committee should really see, okay, who's he going to strike the best deal with? If he were to, you know, what's his endorsement worth to the candidates that are viable, the candidates that are electable? What could he do to strike a deal to say, hey, you advance my position, and I will definitely throw all my support behind you? Hey, that's the position Nader should really look at. Otherwise, you know, we could end up with McCain in office, and, we'd have 8 more years of the same.
Yeah, it amazes me, Alan. This guy, Nader must have, like, a really big ego.
Yeah.
You know, just, I mean, why now? Why now when things are so critical? Well, I think part of it is because, you know what? It's all about Ralph.
Right. Exactly.
I think that's what it is. And then there are people out there who, well, you know, I'm not voting. I can't vote for either of these two people. So I'm going to vote green, or I'm going to, vote. And it's like, okay, fine. But then when that, you know, every vote counts. And so then when you do that and then, you know, things end up being worse than they were before, then, you know, don't come crawling to us and start whining and crying and screaming because, hey, you enabled, by going and doing that, you're an enabler.
Exactly. In my lifetime, there's always been that third-party candidate. There's always been that kind of two-percenter out there that's getting a lot of press that, you know, starts pulling some popularity, whether it's from a grassroots or whatever. The point is, like you had said, we don't have a three-party system. And if it was consistently growing over the last 15, 20 years where, you know, maybe the first election there was a 5% third party, and then there's a 15%. And then, you know, a third party candidate starts making sense as far as building up the idea of a third party system. The point is every race it comes down to two parties. And
yep.
You know, if that's the case, and Nader had a viable shot at the Democratic nomination, or you know, whatever, or there was an independent that was really up there, but the point is it doesn't work, so why not take one for the team and go for the two-party knot? I mean...
Yeah, listen, you know what? I agree. And I'll tell you something. I'm more optimistic now than ever before. I really am, because I think we can really make change here.
Exactly.
We just have to buckle down, make sure we go to our caucuses, make sure we get stuff done, and make sure we don't take anything for granted. And we can make change, and it'll take a while to turn the country around because you're turning around a big ship here, but at least we're going to get started. And I'll tell you what, even though you may not like what Barack Obama has to say, or you don't agree with him totally, or you think Hillary's a better choice, or you don't like Hillary, you know, the fact of the matter is that either of those two is better than what we would get otherwise, and we are never going to turn things around unless we at least get it started on it, and these two will get us started on it.
Exactly. I mean, I've been saying for months now that I'm up for either one. Whether it's Barack, I think Barack's got the passion, the charisma, and the diplomacy to really make some change. Hillary's got the experience. She knows the ins and outs and can create some concrete changes. Either one would be better for the country.
Yeah, I worry about Hillary, but I'll tell you one thing. I'll take her over McCain or anybody else any day of the week.
Exactly.
Don,
exactly.
Thanks, man. Appreciate
thanks.
It.
Thanks. Have fun.
All right. You want to do a little traffic now, Mr. Turk, or do you want to roll on to another caller? It's your choice. Yeah, let's check it out because it's messy out there. It's 8:48, 48 minutes after the hour here on AM 760 Progressive Talk. All right, let's dive into it. Minutes after the hour here on AM 760 Progressive Talk. Good morning. It's sunny. High today, 35. Jay Marvin with you. Working your woofers and tweeters. I don't see the bad moon rising. I see the sun coming out. I see better days ahead. Really do. Okay, let's. We're talking about Ralph Nader running and other stuff, and let's get on the phones here. And here's Curtis in Lakewood, who supports Mr. Nader coming into the race once again. Curtis, you're on AM 760. Hit it.
Good morning. You know, two perfect followings to this. Corporate power. That's what Nader's about. Saying that it's all about him, Jay, is looking at his history. It is not all about him. The other thing is to take one for the team. He's saying he's not on that Democratic team because of what the Democrats have done, like Hillary Clinton. So saying that there's no valid third party is because we don't give the guys the chance.
Yeah, but right now, in this particular situation where we're sitting, we don't have the luxury of giving those guys the chance. And I understand and know about Mr. Nader's background.
Right.
I mean, I remember him all the way back to the Corvair. But
yep.
The thing is, here's the deal, okay? The deal is that in the end, it is all about him because he has no chance of winning. And what he does is he robs Peter to pay Paul, or as Don said, to pay nothing. And he helped cost us the election in 2000.
That's not true, Jake.
It is true.
Ask Al Gore. Al Gore lists about 8 reasons he doesn't even meet. He doesn't even mention Nader. He could have won Tennessee. He could have had Bill Clinton on the campaign.
We're not talking about Tennessee. What we're talking about here is Florida. We're talking about Florida, in which that was a deciding factor. And had Al Gore gotten more votes in Florida, had not 1-2% been shaved off, he would have had a wider margin of victory, which would have settled the whole thing. But Ralph Nader comes in and shaves off 1-2%. And all right, let me ask you this, Curtis.
But it also shaved it off Bush too.
People who vote for George W. Bush are not going to vote for Ralph Nader.
Exit polls showed they did.
Well, you know what? In great majorities, they're not going to do it. But let me ask you this. What's the payoff in voting for Ralph Nader?
The payoff in a state that is going to go Democratic anyway for me, or is going to go the other way, is to get that voice out there. Because the reason he came in now is because Edwards dropped out, because he was behind Edwards. That's why he went out yesterday, because he supported Edwards.
Okay, but all right. So supporting, but you know, if we need crucially the votes and we're in a tight situation.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, and you go for Ralph Nader, then what ends up happening is if enough people follow your lead, then the chances are that the GOP wins and we end up getting either Mitt Romney or John McCain or maybe even Mike Huckabee. Okay, then are we better off doing that or are we better off?
We're better off with either one. The thing that I'm afraid of is that he'll run if Hillary's in there, and that's going to be a closer vote. If he runs with Obama, I think Obama's got a better chance. But if he,
all right,
that's what makes me nervous, right, is when he's out there taking votes away from Hillary.
Yeah, and I buy that totally. But look at this: He takes votes away from Hillary, she loses. We end up with Willard, or we end up with McCain. Are we better off or worse off?
We're worse off.
Okay, so doesn't it make sense that? And I say this all the time on the air, and it's true. Doesn't it make sense to get 75% or 80% of what you want than getting nothing?
Yeah, it is. It totally is. I still, in a state like I voted for Nader in the past in Colorado, because there was no chance that we were going to be, that our electoral votes would go Democrat.
Yeah, but if everybody thinks that way, then we're in deep trouble. I mean, the fact is right now in the situation we're in, we have a historic chance, regardless of who gets the nomination. We have an historic chance here to change things. We have an historic chance to move out of darkness into the sunlight. We can involve everybody in all of this, stop all the divisiveness, and solve our problems. But we are going to have to make a fundamental change at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and by voting for Ralph Nader, it endangers that chance. Thank you, Curtis. I appreciate it. Coming up next, Fox News, a look at it. Stick around.